Haman hatches a plot to wipe out the entire Jewish race, but God had other ideas. Hear all about it next on The Balanced Word.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hand, and the instrument I play, wake up my voice, let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
At various times it may seem like evil is winning, but the book of Esther reminds us that good triumphs over evil. And in the end, God wins. Today on The Balanced Word, we'll take a look at a sinister attack of the enemy to destroy the Jewish race, and how God intervened and put a stop to it. He used a young lady named Esther to do it. Here's Pastor Dave Roth.
Esther chapter 5. Last week we made it through Esther chapter 4. Tonight it's my intention to finish the book. This book, I really enjoy it. It's an incredible story. It's a story that lets us know how God works when it doesn't look like he's working. You know, most of the time in our lives, it seems, frankly, like things are sort of out of control. Things happen that we can't predict, and it becomes rather frustrating. Because what it seems like is every once in a while, God does something huge in our life. But all the time before that, it seems like he's not doing anything. The book of Esther shows that these miracles of God that we experience in our lives are not so remarkable or unusual. It's just that God's been setting them up all along. It seems that God just loves to surprise people. He likes to just catch us. That's why life seems like a roller coaster. It's going up, it's going down, and yet it all fits with God's plan. And the book of Esther illustrates this in a beautiful way without ever even mentioning God in the entire book, without ever talking about prayer. Spiritual activity seems almost non-existent, and yet we see God sovereignly working behind the scenes to bring about just incredible miracles. And for me, the book of Esther is a great encouragement because I know the same God's working today. And when I may be in the middle of something that isn't going the way I want it to go, it almost seems like, man, circumstances are going against what I am asking God to do. It's amazing. Him with his love and his power and his grace, he's working beneath the surface. They say that, well, there's an old expression that the darkest hour is right before the dawn. And I don't know if that's true scientifically. I've never really looked it up. Frankly, I learned it from Bob Dylan, but I've heard it from other people as well. And, you know, if that's the case, that's certainly the way it is in life. We typically don't see things progressively getting better and better and better. It seems to be more typical that it seems like things are the darkest, and then boom, God comes through. And he had a plan all along, and I love the way he does that, and I appreciate it. And Esther really points this out. Well, as we pick up in chapter 5, what's happened in the first four chapters, just to review, this little Jewish girl, Esther, who's an orphan, she's a slave there in the Persian Empire, and she is being raised by her old cousin, Mordecai, a little Jewish guy. His name means little guy. And in the middle of this, you know, pretty negative circumstance, God cleared out an opening in the royal family by allowing, well, it was really a dumb thing that happened. King Ahasuerus, he's also called Xerxes. He's the father of Artaxerxes. He got in a spat with his wife, Vashti, and she was kind of lipping off and didn't do what he wanted her to do. And so she got booted as the primary queen. We don't know what really happened to her. And then the king had a beauty pageant, and the most beautiful girl, the one that won the pageant, was this little Jewish girl, Esther. She became the queen. Well, in the meantime, her cousin got in some trouble because he didn't bow down to basically the vice president of the empire, whose name was Haman. And because he wouldn't bow down to him, this guy just got furious. Haman was just so incensed that he hatched a plot to wipe out the entire Jewish race in the whole Persian kingdom, which stretched all the way from over in northern Africa and Ethiopia all the way to India, stretched across, you know, southern Europe and all of Asia. So he had this plot, and they set this day. They actually cast lots through dice in order to pick what day we should kill the Jews. And it came almost a year later was when the date was set. So the Jews began to find out, Mordecai especially found out, got word to Esther, told Esther, who knows? I mean, look how freaky it is that you went from being a little slave girl orphan to where now you're this beautiful queen of Persia. Maybe God put you there for such a time as this that you're supposed to go to the king and expose this plot and turn things around. And so at first she wasn't too crazy about the idea, but finally she just said, okay, I'll do it. If I perish, I perish. And so, you know, and again, Mordecai, as we saw, you know, a week ago Sunday, was his attitude was, hey, I don't know if this is going to work, but God will save his people one way or another, but you might be the one who's going to be used. And so he challenged her in this way, and she went for it and decided that she would do that she would try to see what she could do. And so here in chapter 5, it says, it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace across from the king's house while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house facing the entrance of the house. In those days, the queen couldn't just come bursting into her king's, her husband's domain, but she could kind of wander through the patio and hang out and hope that he notices her. And if he stuck out his scepter, then she could come. If not, you know, get out of there. You might make him mad. So I'm not saying that that's the way to do it. I'm just saying that's the way they did it in those days. And who doesn't wonder what it would have been like? But so it was when he saw her standing in the courts, and she was all dolled up, put on her best clothes and everything. She found favor in his sight. He's like, oh, yeah. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. She went near and touched the top of the scepter. And he said to her, what do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? If you're dressed up like this, hanging around outside, there must be something you want. And he goes, you're looking so good today that up to half the kingdom, you can have it. Just ask. So Esther answered, if it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him. So she goes, I'll butter him up a little more. He likes what he sees, but a way to a man's heart is through his stomach. She knew that, and she's like, let me fix a great meal for you. And so he said, okay. So he said, get Haman over here. Let's have a banquet. And so they came, and Esther had prepared the banquet. It happened pretty quick, so she must have prepared it already. And at the banquet of wine, verse 6, the king said to Esther, what is your petition? It shall be granted you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done. And Esther answered and said, and then she got kind of nervous and choked, my petition and request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said. Now you can see where she'd be nervous. Haman is the right-hand man to the king. Esther's this little queen who won a beauty contest, but now she already belonged to the king, and there's no reason why she would have a lot of leverage. One thing about once you boot one queen and get another one, it sends a message to the next one, you know, that, hey, look, you know, I got rid of the other one, I can get rid of you. And so she was timid, and there's a proverb that says not to criticize a servant to his master. And so it's like, hey, here's his right-hand guy. I don't know how he's going to take this. So she was nervous, and she said, well, how about another banquet tomorrow? Stalling for time, basically. And so they said, sure, that's fine. Well, Haman, and we looked at verses 9 through 14 on Sunday. So if you weren't here Sunday, get the CD or the tape of that, and you can look over that thing. But the bottom line is Haman was so happy, and then he saw Mordecai. And all the joy that he had meant nothing to him because of this one little guy that got on his nerves, that wouldn't bow down to him, that was just a thorn in his paw. And so when Mordecai didn't stand or tremble, he was filled with indignation. But Haman restrained himself. He didn't go kill Mordecai right then, but he was like, oh, that guy. And he says this telling thing to his wife and friends. What a pathetic line he gave them. He told them of his riches, the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above all the other officials and servants. And besides, Queen Esther has invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow I am again invited by her along with the king. He's going, I am on top of the world. Everything is going great for me. However, verse 13, yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai, that Jew, sitting at the king's gate. Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, let a gallows be made, 50 cubits high, 75 feet. And in the morning suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. First of all, it's amazing what pride can do, that with everything that God has given us, one little thing goes wrong and it ruins everything. One person stands up to us and we've had it and we're not going to take it anymore. How quickly we are taken from a state of joy to a state of absolute just mortification. As one thing doesn't go right and that's it, I've had it. The Lord has convicted me and maybe some of you, as I'm thinking about this passage, how many times I get bugged or I get upset or my week is ruined because of one little person or one little situation or one little thing. And if I look at my life and I go, boy, God has been so good to me. And yeah, if somebody says, how was your week? I go, oh, there's this one little guy that I just, and it's like, but look at everything else that God's doing. Look at how blessed we are. And yet we can be shaken out of that. And it's only pride that does that. It's only when someone comes along and offends our sense of prominence and importance, when someone treats us the way in which we think we should be treated better than that, it's amazing. It's also amazing how sometimes one little blessing from someone can make a difference. And that's why it's important for us to be looking for God's hand in everything that's going on. I shared Sunday about the first night of the Harvest Crusade when I felt like we didn't get treated quite as well as we should have. Parked out in the regular parking lot, Pastor Chuck limping along through the parking lot, no electric carts to pick us up. And at the end of the crusade, they wouldn't let us use, they kicked us out of the elevator because somebody more important was coming along. And it was just, it completely caused me to forget what a blessing it was that thousands of people came and professed faith in Jesus Christ. Now, I'm happy to report that Sunday night, they treated us great. We parked in the players' parking. They had carts there ready for us. Everything was wonderful until we got kicked out of the green room when the Oakland A's came along. But really, it was a wonderful night, and God worked in a special way, and it was great. But I confessed on Sunday that there was a period of about 45 minutes for me when it just ruined harvest for me because I shouldn't be treated like this. And then the Lord was good and I just thought, you know, look what God did. How can I even fight in the traffic in the parking lot just looking, man, look at all these souls, look at these lives. And yet it's so easy for us to lose our perspective because of pride. And so again, that's a short version of Sunday's message. Chapter 6. That night, now Haman goes, another thing to mention is, look at Haman's friends and his family. Boy, they're helping a lot. The guy comes home and he's mad at Mordecai and his perspective is warped and he can't see all the blessings in his life. And his family and friends are more than happy to tell him, boy, you're right, you should be mad. You should maybe tell you what, why don't you build a gallows? And then just maybe say, hey, king, I got a new gallows at my house. Want to use it? Want to try it out on somebody? I have an idea. I have a suggestion. How often do we, when somebody that we love, somebody that we care about, loses perspective and they become upset or angry about something that isn't really worth losing your joy over? We have a choice. We can either encourage them to build a gallows, or we can calm them down and let them know, look, you're blessed. Your life isn't so bad. You're doing okay. Don't lose perspective. Don't let that situation rob you of your joy. His family made the wrong call. Well, it's the easiest thing to do when you want somebody to like you. Just get mad at whatever they're mad at. You have a point. You're right. I agree with you. Just be a yes man. But a real friend will say, okay, I understand how you feel, but slow down here a little bit. Let's not, you know, I know you want to go kill the guy, but you can always calm down for a couple days and kill him on the weekend. You don't need to do it right now. Slow down a bit. A true friend does that. Now, the other thing you'll see about these people later on is when they realize he's in trouble, they go, oh man, you're in trouble. Should have never done this. And that's what people do too. People who cheer you on into foolishness will then back away and let you suffer on your own. Always works out like that. So anyway, that night, Haman's stewing. He's got his guys out in the backyard and he's building a 75-foot gallows in his yard. In the meantime, God is still working and the king can't sleep. And so it says he couldn't sleep, and so he commanded them to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. He said, I can't sleep. My mind is racing. So bring me some history books, and that'll put me to sleep. And so as they began to read this legal history, he heard the story that we read about last week, where Mordecai had saved the king's life when he overheard of these two guys who were plotting to kill Ahasuerus, and he exposed them and saved his life. And the king realized, well, he said in verse 3, what honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this? And the king's servant said, well, nothing really. And so then the king said, hey, it's about morning. Who's hanging out in the court? And there was Haman. Haman was ready to come in. He's still all sweating from building the gallows all night, but he's ready to go, hey, you want to test my gallows? I got a guy that... And so he's standing there in the court, and they go, well, bring him in. The king's servant said that Haman is here. So verse 6, Haman came in, and the king asked him, what shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? He goes, just hypothetically, if I really wanted to honor someone, what would I do? And Haman thought... Who's going to be honored more than me? What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? Whom would the king delight to honor more than me? And so Haman comes up with this great reward. And he answered the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought, which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, that has a royal crest placed on its head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor, then parade him on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. So Haman can see it. There he is, riding the king's horse, the king's crest on the head of the horse, wearing the king's robe, some nobleman walking ahead of him saying, hey, can I have your attention, please? Look, here's what God does to a person that he honors, to a person that's really worthy. And there he is in his daydream, sitting there on this horse, enjoying this adulation. And he thinks, this is cool. This is great. And so the king says, hey, good idea. Hurry. Get the robe and the horse, just like you suggested, and get Mordecai, the Jewish guy who sits outside the gate, and do everything that you just said. Oh, man, can you imagine how his heart sunk? He's like, yeah, why don't you lead him around and do this? But what can you say? Haman got the robe, kind of rubbed it against his face. He's just going, oh, man. Madder than ever, no doubt. Got the horse. Took Mordecai and led him through town and was saying, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. After that, Mordecai went back hanging out at the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house mourning and with his head covered. He was like, that's the most humiliating thing I've ever experienced. For me to lead that little guy that bugs me so much and treat him that way, that stinks. So he actually just pulled his robe over his face and just went home crying like a baby. And then he went and told his wife and all his friends. These people just hang out there, I guess. Everything that had happened to him. His wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. She was like, it was her idea to build the gallows. Yeah, kill the Jew. And then all of a sudden, Mordecai is being honored, and he goes, oh, man. She says, you're in big trouble, man. You're sunk. It's all over for you. Because she knew he hated Jews, wanted to kill them, wanted to wipe out the whole race just to get rid of one guy who wouldn't kiss up to him. And so she just is backing off, and you know, you can see her and her sons and their servants all going, "Man, Haman, what'd you build that gallows for? What a stupid idea. This is really bad." But while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came to bring him to the next banquet. Oh man, he's feeling so low. He's feeling so awful. He's going, "What is happening in my life?"
Thanks for joining us today for The Balanced Word with our pastor and teacher, Dave Rolfe. We're going through the book of Esther, and stay with us for more teaching from Pastor Dave. These programs are available by podcast at thebalancedword.com. We'd also like to offer you Pastor Dave's Through the Bible series on a USB thumb drive for a gift of $20 or more. Go through the Bible with Dave by ordering this special series today. Call 949-362-7475 or go to thebalancedword.com. Your gifts help to make these shows possible on stations like this one all across the nation. Thank you for standing with us with either a one-time gift or ongoing monthly support. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com or again call 949-362-7475. Have you had a chance to listen to Pastor Dave's one-minute messages? You can listen to those at thebalancedword.com and even join our mailing list so you can have them delivered to you each day. You can also watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. We'd love to have you join us for a Sunday service at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our service times on Sunday morning are now at 8 and 10. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And you can watch our live stream there too, ccpacifichills.org. If we can pray for you in any way, we ask that you contact us through thebalancedword.com or by calling 949-362-7475. Now let's turn back to Esther chapter 7 for the rest of today's message.
So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther, and on the second day, this is still the first day, but it was the second party, at the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." Then Queen Esther answered and said, "Well, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request." She said, "All I want is for my life to be spared and my family and my people. Because we've been sold, my people and I. We're already slaves, but now we're being set up to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I wouldn't even be saying anything. We're already slaves, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss." It's pretty clever here. She's going, "You know what? If I was just sold into slavery, it's fine. I'll go. But you'd lose. You see me. You know what I'm like. You appreciate me and my beauty. Ahasuerus, they're trying to take me away from you. If it's just a slave, fine, but they're going to kill your favorite wife." And she was using the fact that she had favor in his sight to go, "This is affecting you and me and God, your people." It reminds me of I heard this joke again the other day about the guy who a lady comes walking through the pet store. And there's a parrot sitting on the perch. And the parrot goes, "You're ugly." And she goes, "What?" He goes, "You heard me, you're ugly. You're the ugliest woman I've ever seen." And she's just insulted. And she goes to the head of the pet store, the owner, and she goes, "That bird's insulting me. I can't believe it. I was just walking through the store." And he goes, "Well, I'll take care of that." And he takes the parrot in the back room and he starts wailing on it. Feathers are flying and puts him back on the perch. And he goes, "I hope that teaches you your lesson." The next day, the lady's walking along again. She sees this parrot kind of beat up, and she looks at it and goes, "So what do you have to say now?" He goes, "You're still ugly. You're still the ugliest woman I've ever seen." And she goes and tells the manager again, and this time beat the parrot within an inch of its life. Most of its feathers are gone. It's put back on the perch, and she looks at it with a knowing look, and it's like, "Yeah, you know." And so the next day she comes back. Here's this poor parrot sitting there, and she's just going, "You got anything else to say?" And parrot doesn't say anything. And then she goes to walk off, and the parrot says, "You know." And that's kind of the, I guess that's a long ways to go. I don't Not quite sure how it connects here, but the idea was Esther's here in front of Haman exposing this plot and just going, look at me. They're trying to take me from you. You know who I am. You see my beauty. And she's about to expose Haman as the guy who was doing it, but she milks it. King Ahasuerus said to, come on, who is he? Tell me who it is. Where is he? Who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? And Esther said, well, I'm glad you asked that. He happens to be sitting right here. I won't tell you who it is, but it's one of the people at the banquet here, and he's the only one. She goes, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman.
We'll stop right here and bring you the rest of the story of Esther next time on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe, a presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.